Blog Talk Radio.
Africa, the center of the world. Latitude zero, longitude zero. Planned by the Creator. Sesanthropus was the first man found on the earth. That earth was the motherland, Africa. We know that without total understanding of what happened in the past, it would be difficult to relate to the future. We know that within the structure of the music, there should be a message, and the message should be truth. So now, we give you Africa, the center of the world.
Africa.
on the Move on December the 4th, 2022, and theme tonight is part 3, News, Making News, and More. Let's join us with our silver panelists and analysts today as you discuss critical issues that are affecting our community and the world. We're going to do at this point in time, like always, and how we get started with our party. We have political panelists and analysts who can stand in the seat, and they're going to take the heat. Because as they define it, they will stand behind it. We may not give you what you want, but we definitely will give you what you need. So what we're going to do right now is continue to travel down the road of liberation, and we're going to speak to the powerless and the powerful. At this point in time, we're going to bring in our first political panelist and analyst and introduce to the listening world, Brother Haki from the African Women Association. We'd like to welcome him to Africa on the Move. Welcome, Brother Haki.
Brother Africa, thanks for having me. My name is Haki Kamathi Mashoki. Currently, I'm with African Awareness and, of course, Brother Africa. You know, my thing is all about institution building. But I think it's certainly, I think one thing that's important that we acknowledge, we have to talk a little bit about the strategic significance in terms of, you know, governments employing ruthlessness. And the reason why governments employ ruthlessness is because it works. But more importantly, implicit in ruthlessness is a certain amount of destruction that has to take place. And imposing that destruction on the population, it keeps people on the defensive. So in other words, the ability to achieve the objectives become that much more certain. So we have to understand, when we look at U.S. Policy, whether we talk about national policy or foreign policy, the use of ruthlessness and destruction to facilitate its strategies. We I think it's important we understand precisely why they do what they do and why they're successful in terms of utilizing ruthlessness and destruction in terms of achieving objectives. Now, having said that, Brother Africa, I want you to check this out. Now, the systematic oppression and ruthless enforcement of the world order serves the interests of a small cabal of capitalists who employ deception and guile to manipulate an unsuspecting population that feel powerless. The catalyst behind the coercion and force in benefit to the interests of connected capitalists lies a system in benefit to a small minority. That system, capitalism, use of violence to achieve its social-political objectives, perpetuates violence at a level that is not only the basis of inequality, but devastation to both life and the planet. Greta Thunberg, the 19-year-old eco-activist, recently declared, "The downfall of capitalism is essential if humanity is to regain a sense of normalcy." Thunberg's assessment of society is generally true, but has particular resonance for the most violent nation known in contemporary times, the U.S. In the U.S., the Supreme Court has been instrumental in reshaping U.S. society. Content to destroy regulatory agencies like Food Drug Administration or the Environmental Protection Agency that make liberal democracy possible, the Supreme Court focus has been to empower privatization, thereby consolidating power among the capitalist class. By enhancing the power of the capitalists, self-interest is assured. Levels of violence and inequality proliferate, and the inevitable rise of authoritarianism will ensure the continuation of fascism in American society. Ironically, fascism will determine the rights of the population. Rights as simplistic as access to food can easily be denied by simply establishing policy, legally sanctioned, that abrogates human rights advocating the right to food. Strategic benefits to denying people food is very effective in controlling the population. If you think this is hyperbole, think about inflation and its impact on food prices. Corporate greed and price gouging, more than any other factor, account for the 8.4% food price increases despite the availability of food, this according to the panel Sustainable Food. In other words, even though enough food exists to keep prices from going up, prices continue to rise. Corporate objective of maximizing profits are achieved, but equally important, the level of stress and instability imposed on the poor results in a more dependent and pliable population, too distracted to advocate for political change or contesting conditions geared toward malaise and premature death of working people. Now, the desire to form a disruption does serve U.S. political objectives. In the case of the U.S. proxy war with Russia, using Ukraine as cannon fodder, The strategy is the impoverishment of Europe, particularly Germany, utilizing U.S. sanctions to prevent, if not discourage, Europe from increasing trade with Russia or China. Dr. Michael Hudson characterized U.S. sanctions as an attempt by the U.S. to compel Europe to be dependent on the U.S. for trade, particularly for energy. This strategy has proved effective. Currently, most of Europe's gas comes from the U.S. Even though the gas from the U.S. is of lower quality, capitalists in Europe are buying this gain by playing along, even at the expense of their own economies. Negative economic impacts on their populations are palpable. Arbitrary impacts on European economies have seen inflation at unprecedented levels, and the economic consequences have been deteriorating healthcare systems, central banks' interest rates increases, and massive social unrest. Never missing an opportunity to take advantage of a crisis, the CIA, along with its European counterparts, have been busy propping up right-wing groups and or individuals, giving right-wing rhetoric legitimacy, and in the process, creation of the right-wing groups willing to carry out the mandates of corporate interests, which entails killing those in opposition to tyranny by the state or massive inequality. Similar strategies are being employed in the U.S. where right-wingers are not classified as terrorists despite their terroristic actions, and insurrectionists are characterized as law-abiding. Now, interestingly, often U.S. political strategy employs dubious logic that invades any sense of reality. Recently, the U.S. government sued a cement firm, Lafarge of France, for $800 million. The trial held in the U.S. Eastern District alleges Lafarge Inc. paid jihadists in Syria $6 million to constrain competition among competing firms and in return would pay jihadists part of the profits Lafarge obtained. The fact Lafarge was instrumental in facilitating terror against the Syrian population was not the concern of the legal system, according to the attorney Breon Peace. While material support for terrorism was one element, the fact Lafarge undermined the possibility of competition in the marketplace was a definitive crime. And Lafarge supported terrorism and advocated competition in the marketplace, this long-term strategy used by the U.S. military intelligence would not have been constituted a crime. Without question, when government equate corporate power as absolute, we should well heed this warning. Syrians killing Syrians certainly serves the interests of U.S. corporate and foreign policy. Any entity capable of challenging U.S. national security interests defined by corporations has to be very powerful. Possession of this kind of power inside the U.S. and outside just simply means corporate pursuit of power is limitless. Now, if corporate interests mandate the destruction of the superfluous, those without material wealth, who exists to stop them, particularly when government is beholden to the corporate state? Increasingly, the level of destruction imposed upon the powerless is more insidious, concealed in oblique packaging that uses the legitimacy of established institutions. COVID-19 is a perfect example of creating the conditions in which a vaccine presumably for good resulting in more harm than good. For example, in the U.S. alone, over 98 million people infected, resulting in over 1 million deaths. Internationally, over 632 million cases resulting in 18 million deaths. In the U.S., the irony is with only 110 beds average per 10,000 COVID diagnosis, the supply falls woefully short, but despite lack of hospital beds, the number of COVID deaths were minuscule. How will you explain allegedly such a dangerous virus with a low mobility and mortality level? The machinations do not end with COVID-19. Currently, corporations in conjunction with U.S. intelligence funded with U.S. government dollars are working on messenger RNA interference technology. Combined with anti-sense technology, the objective is to create viruses, viral molecules that bind with receptors on cells to hijack specific functions of cells on any parts of the body. If I were to surmise, I would suspect the destructive impulse of capitalism will employ this technology in keeping with U.S. national security interests on some poor, unsuspecting nations before it is unleashed on the U.S. population. The bottom line is without planned destruction of people and ecosystems, the longevity capitalism seeks cannot be assured. While we sleep comfortably at night, plans to innovate increasing levels of destruction on humanity ruminates in the minds of very powerful, amoral individuals who marvel at ingenious ways to kill. Capitalism's existence ensures the elevation of the most sadistic individuals, innovating technologies that will hasten destruction across the board. We all must be concerned. And Brother Africa, I'll close with that.
Brother, you definitely have given the people something to think about. We thank you. Next, we go to Brother Moses and welcome him to Africa on the Move. Brother Moses, welcome to Africa on the Move.
Thank you, Brother Africa, and greetings to everyone within the sound of my voice, especially the illustrious panelists. My name is Robert Andrew Moses, and I've been in the struggle for scientific socialism from the moment I was introduced to Marxism during a government class back in my high school years, 1968. I call Marxism the race to cure racism. I bear witness that there's one God, Jesus, who is the author and finisher of my faith, and that Mao Zedong is its messenger for government. Fathers, help your children. We don't reverse correct verdicts. I'm pro-choice, and I vote. I believe that women hold up half the sky. Therefore, I'm for the Equal Rights Amendment, ERAS. And the struggle continues to be to unite the many to defeat the few. We have to continue to speak truth to power and rely on dialectics. And I want to thank you again, Brother, for allowing me to be on the show.
Thank you, Brother Moses. And by the way, for our listening audience, Brother Moses and our next upcoming panelists and Sister Eleanor, they are members of the D.C. Metro Cuban Coalition in Defense of the Revolution. So right now we will go directly to Sister Eleanor. Sister Eleanor, welcome to Africa on the Move. Can you hear us, Sister Eleanor? Hello, I think we may be having some technical issues with Sister Eleanor. So what we're going to do right now, we're going to a revolutionary cultural break, and when we come back, we're going to discuss what's going on in your world and community. This is Brother Africa, and you are listening to Africa on the Move. We'll be right back.
Black man, go on and get a cat scan. I had chain wrap too straight, too tight. We get a backhand, there ain't no Batman in this black land. I wish a rich nigga would come and save the day and pave the way. Ain't no amazing grace, I blaze the haze to remain the faith. 20 years been my medicine, but they wanna throw me away for that, then turn around and legalize it. I wish being black was truly accepted. 400 year elephant in the room, this ain't a new deal. They've been treating us like animals, we in a zoo still. So let me tell you how I feel. Guilty conscience trumps common sense every day, y'all. Ignore the issues, look at the victim like it's their fault. As if a wagon ain't harassing, waiting for jaywalkers in front of the building, minding your business. You was trying to pay your bills as if that wasn't to mention. Conjunction, junction, tell me what's your intention. Don't call him king, then treat him like some common folk. You a fighter like Ronda Rose, drowsy move around the rope. Drowsy with a cloud of smoke, howdy do for Maui, bro. Traveling around the globe, you didn't know, but now you know. Early morning risings, my end of alarm kicking. Birdman hand rubs, feeling my palms itching. I need a spiritual thought with top that's top notch. We watch Black Power Docs and study our chakras.
Ooh, child, don't you ever come down. You acting like the sun ain't out. And we gon' cop a ticket and fly on out of here, fly on out. Ooh, child, don't you ever come down. You acting like the sun ain't out. And we gon' cop a ticket and fly on out of here, fly on out.
Oh dear black man, tell me what happened. You can't be low when your glow's everlasting. Then when your ass been on aspen like I has been. Raising the trap when the guards talk math and moves with a Mac 10. Not that nigga back then, but look now nigga, I'm established. Cut camera action, I cut lines with my sad card. My bitch is packing, then I'm cutting in line with a bad boy. They caught him flagging, then huddle around him with a stat chart. Look, each day I wake up feeling better than I ever ever been. Check out my melanin, it's now the makeup for the mannequin that wants to be the same as a slave or an sedative. You kill culture, I give knowledge, I spit stylish. Crane kicks and Balenciagas and speaking science. And bodegas that grow flavors was taught language, was taught to talk with the razor from having Spanish neighbors. I fought the haters, caught chases and lost paper. Educated killers walking no ladies cross the street. Turn back around, walk across and sell hard to a fee. No turning back now, rent you and your kids gotta eat. Yeah, black man rooted deep with the blood of a king. Yeah, black man rose as a rose from the cold concrete. I eat, walk, talk gritty. Snitches get $1.50. One slice, $1.50. Both get cut quickly. Until they free Goldie, nobody can fuck
talk
with
about me. Oh, child, don't you ever come down. You acting like the sun ain't out. So we gon' cop a ticket and fly on out. It can't fly on out. Oh, child, don't you ever come down. You acting like the sun ain't out. Fly on out, fly on out.
Black became beautiful, then made America great again. See the page in history or see the grave and hate again. I'm from New York, the last state to free the slaves, and now we getting to the point where they rebooting Martin Payne and them. Black man, switch it up, just to be versatile. Why you always mean mugging? Man, it never hurts to smile. Make a record, break a record, get the record straight. I'm just trying to get it going, I'm trying to accelerate. Life alert. Welcome to my world, live and living color, stay low, word to J-Lo out here with my fly girl. Black man, they give you whack answers, they robbing you with Batman, they give you Black Panther. When all our people dying, they think that we need a movie, but the box office don't break off the descendants of Huey. Think about it, I'm cooler than a Coca-Cola polar bear. Hold up, roll up something potent right before we go in there. Maroon Custom, support that shit that touches the streets. Puffing a leaf on a corner that gave me nothing but grief.
Right.
Don't come around my way if your whole message is how much you got. If you ain't got no fucking shot, then don't touch the fucking rock. Lucy still 50 Cent, cool what kind of blunts you got. You can lock a few niggas for hustling, but nothing stops. The judge just makes a hero, and a young black boy lose they fucking pops and go on a robbing spree like fuck the ops. Phone out of battery, Black Mirror, word to Windex. King of the table of contents, human index. I handle everything myself, the one man quintet. Let's take it where it hasn't been yet. Dear black man, worth life. One take. Fuck Jay.
You have the emergence in human society of this thing that's called the state. What is the state? The state is this organized bureaucracy. It is the police department. It is the army, the navy. It is the prison system, the courts, and what have you. This is the state. It is a repressive organization. But the state, and you, well, you know, you've got to have the police, because if there were no police, you have the emergence in human society of this thing that's called the state. What is the state? The state is this organized bureaucracy. It is the police department. It is the army, the navy. It is the prison system, the courts, and what have you. This is the state. It is a repressive organization. But the state, and you, well, you know, you've got to have the police, because if there were no police, look at what you'd be doing to yourselves. You'd be killing each other if there were no police. But the reality is, the police become necessary in human society. Only at that juncture in human society, where it is split between those who have and those who ain't got.
I saw a Molotov cocktail at the precinct, you know how we think. Organize the hood under I Ching banners. Red, black, and green instead of gang bandanas. FBI spying on us through the radio antennas. And I'm hitting cameras in the street like watching society. With no respect for the people's right to privacy. I take a slug for the cause like Huey P. While all you fake niggas try to copy Master P. I wanna be free to live, able to have what I need to live. Bring the power back to the street where the people live. We sick of working for crumbs and filling up the prisons. Dying over money and relying on religion for help. We do for self like ants in a colony. Organize the wealth into a socialist economy, a way of life based off the common need. And all my comrades is ready, we just spreading the seed.
Child is black male, live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male, and the people don't never get justice, and the women don't never get respected.
No more bondage, no more political monsters, no more secret space launches. Government departments started it in the projects, material objects, thousands up in the closets. Could have been invested in the future for my comrades. Battle contacts, primitive weapons out in combat. Many never come back, pretty niggas be running with gas. Rather get shot in they back than fire back. We tired of that, corporations hiring blacks, denying the facts, exploiting us all over the map. That's why I write the shit I write in my rap. It's documented, I meant it. Every day of the week, I live in it, breathe in it. It's more than just fucking believing it. I'm holding in ones, rolling up my sleeves and shit. It's CeeLo for push-ups now, many headed for one conclusion. Niggas ain't ready for revolution.
Your average black male, live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respected. And the problems don't never get solved. And the jobs don't never pay enough. So the rent always be late. Can you relate? We living in a police state.
We'd like to welcome you back to Africa on the Move. This is part 3 on the series News You Can Use and More. Right now, we're going to make our transition to the first segment of our program. During this program, we're expecting to have with us special guest, Sister Empathy of the Million Woman Move and March and Movement, as well as we hope to have with us Sister Jacqueline Wade, who work with the Maria Movement. As they come along, we'll bring me in. But in the meantime, I'm Brother Africa. We're going to be in the seat and we're going to take the heat. We're going to bring on our political panelists and analysts. And we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in your world and the community. You're welcome to join us like always by calling 323-679-0841. That's right, 323-679-0841. We'd like to have your perspective in terms of what's going on in your world and your community. Feel free to call in, and when you call in, please hit 1 so we can acknowledge your last 4 numbers. So at this point in time, what I would like to do is start off this discussion with my panelists and analysts. Just ask them about their response from the governor of Virginia, who recently said in the year 2023, he's advocating and trying to put in new legislation that from the grade level of K to the fifth grade, that's right, K to the fifth grade, there will be no discussion about the history of Martin Luther King and the so-called civil rights period. That will be denied access to students from the age of K to the fifth grade when you talk about social studies and history. Now, what is the value and the purpose of denying and not recognizing that aspect of our history to the youth of today from the grade level K to the fifth grade? Also, I was recently reading an article on around the country. For some reason or another, they may no longer know how to so-called legally inject people who have been put on a death row and kill them in a so-called humane way. There seems to be some kind of way that people are not following the so-called instructions and procedures where at least human beings will be treated in a humanly way, which we don't know this is not a humanly way when you're injecting a human being to kill them. But anyway, there seems like there's torture going on when they now carry out these so-called execution within these criminal justice prison system, or we said criminal injustice prison system. So panelists, was this proposal no longer teaching civil rights history, teaching the history of MLK and his contribution to this society and the world from the grade level K to grade 5? What do y'all make of this nonsense? I start off with you, Brother Haki. Your response.
Well, Brother Africa, I think it's just emblematic, you know, of the insanity that's permeating in society. One thing is very clear, the ruling class are under threat. And, of course, the role of information, the role of knowledge has a very penetrating impact. In fact, when you endow people with information, with knowledge, they tend to make better choices. They tend to see the world in much clearer terms. And certainly, one of the things when we talk about the deconstruction of capitalism as the system declines, people in the power don't want people to think critically in terms of what goes on in society. What is interesting, when you talk about, you know, pre-K to fifth graders, one of the things, you talk about somebody like Martin Luther King, which stood for good. When you talk about such an individual, it's discussed in such a way in which these kids essentially get it. They can understand on a very rudimentary level the difference between what is good and what is bad. They don't want these kids to grow up with that strong sense in terms of what is good and what is bad. I suspect what they're doing is they're trying to delay that process. So when the kids get in sixth grade, they've been so indoctrinated with their parents in terms of, you know, resisting certain ideas. I think when you start talking about Martin Luther King by the sixth grade, the biases are efficient in these kids where they can just simply dismiss the irrelevance in terms of why Martin Luther King existed in the first place. So I think that this is pretty much symptomatic of, you know, of a declining system. And of course, truth is a very difficult thing for people in traditional power to absorb. One of the things, if you can create a situation with children, don't think about these kind of situations. We talk about the absurdity or the injustice that permeates society. If you get kids not to think about those things, then of course you ultimately end up with adults who don't think about those kinds of things, which means that the system gets perpetuated, which is precisely what they want. And when we talk about to perpetuate the system, we cannot dismiss the idea that when people who grow up are ignorant in terms of the realities, then when they embrace ideas that are counterproductive or ideas that are destructive, they do so out of the guise because they think that's what they're supposed to do. And certainly when you talk about the lack of knowledge, it certainly prepares them to accept and embrace those ideas, those practices, which are antithetical to what is good for humanity. So this is the point. This is what the ruling class, the conservative right wing, wants to achieve. I think that the mere fact that they're adamantly opposed to little kids learning what is good in the world speaks to the kind of a difference the ruling class have with respect to what is decent and wholesome and what is just and what is fair. So clearly, Brother Africa, I think this is symptomatic of a declining economy, so I don't think anybody should be surprised. But more importantly, I think it's important for we to teach our children the history. I keep saying that. We don't need anybody else to validate our history. We must teach our children history. Very simple, and I close with that.
Thank you, Brother Haki. As we stated earlier in our announcement, we will be having Sister Impa Chief of the Ming Woman Margin Movement and our Sister Jacqueline Wade that will be joining us during this segment. And I see them now in the box. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to bring them in. We're going to talk about what's going on in their world, in their community. And first, we'd like to bring in Sister Empress, welcome her to Africa on the Move, and welcome Sister Empress, the originator of the Million Woman March. Welcome, my sister. How you doing?
Yes, greetings, brothers. Greetings, family, and thank you again for allowing us to share this information tonight. It's always wonderful to be here on Africa on the Move.
And along with our sister, we also have with our sister Jacqueline Way, who is speaking
on how you
doing? Her struggle and the movement she's involved in terms of trying to free our brother movement. Sister Jacqueline, we'd like to welcome you to Africa on the Move. We'd ask you to introduce yourself. You're a first-time visitor, and tell us a little something about you.
Sure, I'm a first-time visitor. I'm with the Mumia Abul-Jamal Health Committee, and I am bringing a giant Mumia puppet for the fabulous event at the UN on genocide on Saturday, but we'll get more into detail later about that, and Sister will tell you more about all that than me.
Yep.
Okay.
Brother Africa, also check your boards because we may also be joined by Sister Gwen DeBrow, who is also a part of the Free Mumia mm-hmm. Committee in New York. So check to see if she may be joining us. Yes,
I think we have Sister Gwen now on 5449. Sister Gwen, if you can hear me, we'd like to welcome you as well to Africa on the Move. Welcome, our sister.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, Sister Gwen, briefly introduce yourself to our listening audience.
Sure. My name is Gwen DeBrow, and I work with the campaign to bring Mumia home, as well as mobilization for Mumia and Love Not Fear, based in Philadelphia. But I'm based in New York with the campaign to bring Mumia home. But I work with
And you work with us also. Okay.
Excuse me?
You also work with the Mumia Health Committee.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, I forgot about that. Hey, Jacqueline, I didn't know you were going to be on too.
No problem. No problem. Don't worry about that. We know we do so much. We do so much work. We just want to be humble, because there's so much work done by so few people. So, sister, we are honored to have y'all here tonight. But this is our segment of what's going on in your world community. We start with Sister Empress. I understand you have some projects and things going on. Give us an update. What's going on with the Million Woman March and movement?
Oh, well, as you know, Brother Africa, we always doing stuff. We would not be us if we did not do things on an ongoing, regular basis. And that's what we were taught, that consistency is key. And so we see the examples of many who have come before us, and it is our commitment. And just we must continue to work in that frame mind or in that frame of reference to be consistent and to do these things by any and all means necessary. And so MWM has gone through many trials and tribulations over the years, but we always, we like to, what's to do, the energetic bunny or somebody, we take a licking, but we keep on ticking. And that's
okay,
what we
sound like a winner.
That's right. And, you know, and again, you know, as they say, you know, truth crushed to the earth will definitely rise again. And so that is what we are now doing. We're rising up. We're now the first global movement for women and girls of African descent worldwide. And as you know, today we had, I think, our fourth meeting where we are meeting with sisters globally in preparation for the Million Woman World March, which will take place next year in at least three continents, along with several cities throughout the U.S. We'll tell you more about that a little later on. But presently, MWM, meaning Million Woman March Universal Movement, we have launched several campaigns. One of them is the We Charge Genocide 21 Project. And we kind of examined the work of several, Paul Robeson, William Patterson, Dr. Yusef Klee, Dr. Robert Brock, of course, Queen Mother Moore, and definitely Mother St. Callie House. We examined those works and others to see what reparations really is or was. You know, we looked at to see how they were doing. Of course, Malcolm X, 1964, going to the African Union on our behalf to bring the issue of Black human rights violations. And so we had to look closely to see what are we talking about today. Of course, many are focusing on reparations / reparatory justice, but how is that relevant to genocide? And so we created 5 years ago the We Charge Genocide 21, which not only focuses on reparations, but 21 areas of crimes against humanity as it pertains to our people for over 400 plus years. And so we look at the genocide of yesterday, or, you know, in first being brought here, but also looking at it presently, and particularly in the form of sophistication, the ways genocide / crimes against humanity is inflicted upon us. With that said, one of the areas is COINTELPRO, connected to, of course, political prisoners. These are two of the 21 areas that we say is genocide. How and why? Well, examine COINTELPRO, what it specifically has said to target our people and others, but our focus is always our people. That's not necessarily a political correct thing to say, and for some, you know, they don't like it, and all we say is too bad, because that's who and what we are. And others can say and do whatever they like, and that's fine, and we support that. But we also support self-determination in that we're very specific in what we say, and that is our political prisoners, people of African descent. That doesn't mean we don't support others, but this particular campaign is specific. people of African descent. Those are the people that the We Charge Genocide 21 is working to get freed, as well as to make certain that justice is served the way we see it, based on the murders of Fred Hampton, Chairman Fred Hampton in Chicago, and so many others that COINTELPRO has been connected to in terms of murder, setup, incarceration, and so forth. There's so many. And so to fast forward, Mumia Abu-Jamal, when you read some of the files on Mumia going back to him when he was 14 years of age, we realize that several of our freedom fighters were, in fact, targeted. And Mumia is clearly one of them. So now with hopefully, prayfully, December 16th is his next court date. He's got to be freed now after 40 years. And by the way, December 9th is coming. That will mark 41 years of Mumia almost being killed. And, of course, then captured come December 9th. So on December 10th, we plan to be outside of the United Nations building in New York, the headquarters, with, as Sister Jacqueline mentioned, with the banner, with banners, with puppets, with whatever. It's not going to be a large crowd. That's not the point. But it will be on record that we are issuing a people's indictment of COINTELPRO, and with that, the demand for the release of all of our political prisoners, including Iman Jamil Al-Amin. And of course, Dr. Motula Shakur is actually due to be released on December 16th, the day of Mumia's court date. But our position, our sisters that are with us tonight and those who are with us in spirit, we are just making certain that as many people can know about what's going on with Mumia. When my sisters come on, they're going to give you some updates in terms of the health situation, because that's the committee that they have a primary focus on, even though, you know, all of the issues of Mumia is a priority. But again, there are health issues that need to be looked at. He's served 40 years. This needs to stop. And we need to make sure that as many people know about this and then take some action. We got some action steps for you as well. But again, next Saturday is International Human Rights Day. Many are leaving on Tuesday and Wednesday to go to Geneva for some special sessions dealing with human rights issues. So we're going to chime in our way. We can't be in Geneva, but we certainly can make certain that a message is sent. And Sister Julia Wright informed us last night on our call that UN officials are watching. They are aware of Mumia. So now we've got to make sure that we follow up and even, you know, strengthen what they already know. So I'm going to turn it over to our sisters. I'll just say next Saturday, if you're in the New York area, and also we're going to be on Facebook, so you can join us that way as well. Starting at 12 o'clock noon, we'll be doing a press briefing and a rally. It is to free Mumia Abu-Jamal and all of our political prisoners. If you want to sign on, because we're going to launch the campaign on that day, which is the People's Indictment of COINTELPRO. Lastly, a few days prior to that, on Zoom, there will be two special sessions on the 7th and the 8th for students, young adults, youth, and parents too, to begin to help our young folks to know what human rights is, what the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is, what is reparations, who are some of the people. There's what we call a teach in and speak out. And then we'll have them to share with us what are their views about some of the injustices that we have seen and are seeing in our community. So I'm going to turn it over to our sisters. Well, back to you, Brother Africa, first, and then you can go from there. But again, family, you can reach us at nationalmwm at AOL.com. Again, National MWM at AOL.com. And I'll give you some other email and numbers to call. But I need to point this out as well. And then we're going to go back to Brother Africa. Children are coming from Elaine, Arkansas, for the rally that we're going to have on Saturday. And this is where we really need your additional support, because we want to make sure that the children are able to come comfortably and then also be able to enjoy their stay. These children are descendants of loved ones who were murdered in Elaine, Arkansas. For those who are not familiar with what's known as the Red Summer, 1919, we didn't hear much about it. In fact, I didn't hear anything at all until Sister Julia brought it to our attention. But at least 50 people were murdered, black folks were murdered in Elaine, Arkansas in September 1919. And one of them, well, prior to that happening, and again, this was based on black folks wanting, who were farmers, who wanted to come together, protect their land, grow and develop, and white supremacists said no, and as a result, murdered them. Now, the report said 50. Of course, the people say at least 100. So the point is, there are children coming, or young adults coming, who are the descendants of murdered people, our people. And Sister Julia has been brilliant in connecting the tragedy and the terrorism of the families of the people there, which, by the way, her uncle, a year or so prior to those murders, her uncle was hung there. And that's how the connection kind of came about, her doing the research about her uncle, then learning about the massacre that occurred in that town, which is now still suffering. But the point is, children, young adults, rather, are coming to join in support of solidarity to free Mumia. And again, they have been provided much information. They know about Mumia. So they're not just coming for the trip. They know about Mumia and are in full support. They feel and sense what has happened with him in the injustice, and they are writing letters that will go to the judge to convey to the judge she really needs to do the right thing. And we're asking all of you to do the same thing, but with children or young adults or students in your circle. We want this to be a national campaign that is both for Mumia but also for all of our political prisoners. So let's go back to Brother Africa, and then we're going to hear from our sisters.
I'm so honored, my sister, you allowed me to get back to the mic. Thank you. Sister Jacqueline, you know we love you.
Yes.
What's up with this big what, you gonna bring a big
a big puppet? It's a
giant puppy. And how does that relate to this concept of freedom? Yeah, what's up with this giant puppy? Talk to our listening audience. Tell us what's the significance of that.
So I'm going to give you a little history. I started attending marches and demonstrations maybe about 3.5 years ago in Philadelphia for Mumia Abdul-Jabbar. And I am an activist who's an artist, puppet maker, filmmaker, so on and so forth. And one thing I noticed, there were a lot of brilliant speakers, but I said, this needs more than that. It needs a puppet, okay? Large political puppets capture attention, okay? And I brought this to Pam Africa's attention. I said, how would you like a giant, maybe 18 to 20-foot puppet of Mumia? The first time I ever saw Pam smile, she came all giddy, yes, 3.5 months or so making it. Wasn't sure how well it would turn out or not. And we brought it down, I think it was like June 3rd, and it was an event for Consuelo. I remember that. We were supposed to go to the Liberty Bell, but it rained that day. But it was magnificent. It got the people's attention. It got them talking about Mumia. And I just know from past experience dealing with large puppets that it doesn't matter what side of the argument you are on in Mumia, First of all, that puppet captures your attention. Then it also humanizes Mumia. You understand what I'm saying, okay? To me, mm-hmm. the puppet is nothing but pure love. Pure love is what Mumia is. This man, as Sister Filet has said, has served 40 years, okay? Whether you think he's guilty or not, he served his time. Release him, you know? So, yeah, puppet is a... It's stronger, or as strong as a banner, as strong as a speaker. It makes a statement, a very strong political statement.
And in terms of looking at this case and this judge that's going to be held in this case, mm-hmm. are there anything in reference to the judge you would like to maybe share with our listening audience? What are you
sure.
expecting from the judge?
Okay.
Do you think you can get more of a justice for our judge this time around?
Right. Okay. One thing I forgot to mention, right, and then I'll go right into the judge. The children from Elaine, Arkansas, are actually coming in this Thursday, and they're going to spend a day on what I call maintenance of the puppet. So things where he may be needing a little patch-up or painting or paper mache, that's going to be them. It's going to be hands-on with them. And Mama Julia was just thrilled. She's got like a little kid also herself, you know, and afterwards, we're going to take them to dinner. I believe my church is going to help bring them there along with the Mumia Health Committee. And I know they would love to hear them read the letters and all like that and then see a little bit of New York. Now, to the judge. Okay. I sat in that hearing. And, you know, she's a very articulate woman, and she even appears compassionate. But, you know, I was really shocked with the results of it. I was even more shocked when I saw the documentary. It was a short documentary that the Archdiocese of Philadelphia put out because she is Catholic, like I am Catholic by baptism, okay, even though I have issues with Catholicism now. And what it was showing was that how she was a devout Catholic, how she practiced the Beatitudes, okay, which is very hard to believe, how her great-grandfather had been lynched by the KKK, how she had three black sons, okay, three, right, and that she was for restorative justice, yet she's not for any kind of justice for Mumia. And I find that very sad, very, very sad that this woman claims to represent what she represents, highly esteemed, highly respected, right, but is not willing to go forward and give his case another chance. That's problematic. You know, she's saying procedural. His lawyers have followed procedural, okay? What it appears to me is perhaps she's being pressured by the governor or Rendell or whomever else. She is a puppet for, okay? But it's wrong. It's really wrong. What I'm hoping, okay, because I believe all human beings have love in their heart, is that she will find the love for Mumia and give her compassion and understanding as another human being towards this man's case. And I believe she has, you know, really, really studied his case in depth. And she knows, as well as we know, that he's innocent. And no matter what may be pressuring her, we're just asking her, just do the right thing. Do the right thing or just walk away. Walk away, okay? Walk away. He doesn't deserve this. He doesn't deserve this. Just understand that Mumia is her son. She is Mumia, okay? We are Mumia. And until she understands that, that's going to be a very big problem.
You know, Jacqueline, from the beginning, this case has been very political, a political one. Someone may well ask you, understand the political nature of this case. What love has to do anything with this case? What will be your response?
Love. What's love have to do with it? Okay. So for me, I just, I attended a retreat up at Peace Village. Okay. And the whole thing was a path to love. And it wasn't so much a relationship between man and woman, woman and woman, or whomever, right? But it's about humanity, okay? Why are we here on this earth? You know, it's not here to kill and destroy each other. It's to deal with love. It's not to have a man incarcerated for 40 years to life. What about that? Okay? You know, I don't know. I understand that she is a judge, and I'm not going to take that away from her. But I'm talking about the universal principles of love, seeing the love and humanity in Mumia. You understand? That's what I'm talking about. Just see, just like she loves her son, love Mumia. Understand him as a human being. But she's not seeing that. You understand? She really understood love, and she really understood his case, which I know she does. Then things would be different. Am I making sense?
It makes sense, but in capitalism, you know, there's really no love in capitalism. But we're gonna struggle and try to do the best we can to make things right, to help him get our brother out. But let me just make this transition to our sister Gwen. Sister Gwen, can you give us an update on the status of Mumia Health and any other issues concerning this issue of health care as relates to his case? Sister Gwen.
Well, currently, organizers, particularly Noelle Hanrahan and Dr. Ricardo and Mark Taylor, who's a theologian at Princeton University, he's been involved with the Mumia case way longer than I have. But he's his spiritual advisor, and they, you know, visit him on a regular basis. Dr. Ricardo, I believe, visited him a couple of weeks ago. This was the first time the two of them met. But from what I understand, Mumia is doing a lot better. Who else commented? Someone said recently, Steve Vittoria, the gentleman that did the movie Long Distance Revolutionary, which was screened a couple of nights ago online, he has saw Mumia recently, from what I understand, just as Dr. Ricardo has, and they give a good report. Nevertheless, we're still fighting to get him a healthy diet, a healthy heart diet, you know, which is less, you know, less carbs, more fresh vegetables and fruit, clean water. Excuse me, an exercise regimen, you know, not being so pinned down to his cell and actually getting fresh air. So we're working on that actually currently. And I think in the end he's eventually going to get it, even though they're fighting like mad not to give it to him. Because if they give it to him, guess what? They're going to have to give it to the other prisoners too, which is good. I mean, if you're going to sentence people to life in prison, seems like to me you would want to have them live longer. No, I mean, I don't know. Seems contradictory to feed them carbohydrates so much so that they get diabetes and end up, you know, chopping off their arms or legs, and they get, you know, heart disease, because that's what he developed during the 2 years we were, you know, with COVID. He developed a heart disease because they had to remain in their cells 23 hours a day, and they had their meals in their cells. They weren't able to be with other, you know, with the other people. So that's how Mumia developed a coronary heart disease, and he was, unfortunately, if he doesn't get out of there soon, he's going to die there. Because his heart is going to give out, because he's has a weakened heart. He's not – the man is 68 years old, and prison ages you, you know. And don't forget, he was shot, you know. Right. And he's got diabetes. He's got a chronic skin ailment. And the other thing is he's got a serious heart disease. which is not going to get.
Can I add something?
Sure.
Can I add
go
something
ahead,
to that? Okay, sorry. Sure. So, Sister Gwen, what she's also talking about is that, okay, if Mumia is 68, he's really like 88. You have to understand, it ages you. It's not the mind, the body, by being
physically.
In such physical body, by being in such a horrible contained situation with what they're feeding him, the stress he's under, not being around loved ones. That's why, and just going to make an aside, this new bill that Senator Street is introducing, SB 835, deals with compassionate release. However, Mumia is not considered under compassionate release because he's not terminal, okay? And the argument is, why should a prisoner get out when he's at stage 4 cancer and only has less than 1 year to live? So you're talking about the quality of life is just not there. It's not there. And Mumia and all the other prisoners deserve better. Mr. Gamble, who had gotten compassionate release, I think it was back in March, recently died. And the one thing that he begged for chemotherapy. You have to understand, begging for it, and he can't get it. And he's suffering. So I'm going to let Gwen continue, but it's inhumane. It's beyond inhumane what's happening to these prisoners. He's been there over 40 years. And like I keep saying again, if you even think he's guilty, he served his time. Let him out. Just let him out. Let him out. He's of no harm to anyone. Okay? And I will say this to Faulkner's wife. Faulkner is the one who's the wife of the officer who was shot. Okay? What I would love her to do is find forgiveness. Okay? Whether she blames Mumia or she blames someone else. Just find forgiveness, find love, and let him out, okay? Let him out. Go ahead, Gwen. Sorry.
Because he, like Jackie just said, he's no threat to anyone. Mumia was a nerd as a young child, and he's a nerd now. And that's why we know for sure. I was not there, but guess what? I know for sure that Mumia did not commit that crime. And the reason why I know that is because they have no physical evidence to link Mumia to the murder of Daniel Faulkner. All they have is testimony by speculative people, by a prostitute. They have a testimony by Robert Chaubert, who was driving without a license and had a pending criminal case against him for throwing a Molotov cocktail at a schoolyard. And he claims that he was parked behind a police officer's car on December 9, 1981 at 4 a.m. in the morning, was directly behind a police officer. It doesn't add up. Secondly, witnesses say, and pictures demonstrate that his car was not parked behind the police officer's car. The pictures that the Pedro Polakoff pictures were discovered, which was discovered in 2006, and Pedro Polakoff, a crime scene photographer, actually offered those pictures to the prosecution, and they blew him off. They never wanted those pictures. But meanwhile, they claim Mumia, killed a police officer. Meanwhile, the pictures do not show any divots or holes in the ground where they said Mumia shot the officer. Also, the picture showed the police officers mishandling the weapons they have with their bare hands. And also, Officer Faulkner had a driver's license application in his shirt pocket with the name Arnold Beverly on it. his hat, the Daniel Faulkner's hat, was on the passenger side of Billy Cook's car, who Billy Cook is Mumia's brother. The hat, the police officer's hat, was on the passenger side of the VW, the car, which means that there was a fourth person at the scene of the incident where this police officer died and Mumia was shot by the police officer as he was running to aid his brother. The jury never knew that there was a fourth person at the scene. All they knew was at the scene. All they know was at the scene was Mumia, the dead cop who was wounded. Excuse me, the dead cop, Mumia was wounded in the chest, got shot by Faulkner, and Billy Cook. They were not aware that there was a fourth person at the crime scene. Also, Mumia was Sister Empress spoke about. Mumia was tracked by the Philadelphia police and the FBI, who had a 700-page dossier on a child, and in their own records, I read it for myself. One of the documents said the Negro male showed no propensity towards violence. They also had a photograph of Mumia with the word "dead" written on it, and the cops claim that they never did a gunpowder residue test to test Mumia's hands to see if he shot a weapon, and to test the gun to see if it was shot. But a cop was killed, and you never did that test. That defies logic and standard criminal investigations, particularly when a cop was murdered and you didn't do that test. No, that doesn't make it. That doesn't make any sense to me. I met Mumia a few years ago before COVID hit us. Oh, it must have been about 3 or 4 years ago. And my heart bleeds for this man, because in my heart I know he did not do what they said he, what they claimed that he did, because there's no evidence, there's no physical evidence to link him physically to the dead cop. There's not even any blood, Daniel Faulkner's blood, on Mumia, because they said the prosecutor Joseph McGill said that Mumia stood over Daniel Faulkner and shot him point blank. If he did that, then Mumia would have Daniel Faulkner's blood on him. He does not. This is a frame up because Mumia was a vigilant reporter who Rizzo actually threatened at a press conference, and he was a supporter of MOVE, and he spoke out vigilantly about police brutality, and he was a threat to them. So they had a perfect patsy for this unfortunate death police officer. They also claim, police officers also claim that Mumia said, "I shot the MF." Now, Mumia doesn't even speak like that. He doesn't speak like that. He's not someone, you know, to use profanity. And the doctor at that night recalled that Mumia didn't say anything because he was almost in shock. His sister, who went to see him that night, and it's said that he was barely recognizable because they beat him up that night, and they took a half hour to bring him to the emergency room. They meant for him to die that night, but God would have it that Mumia is alive, off death row, got his hepatitis C treatment after fighting them, going to court and forcing them to do what they're supposed to do. Corrections is supposed to be care, control, and concern for that person. So how do you deny them a medical treatment that would cure them? he's also got damage to his liver because they took so long in giving him the hepatitis C treatment. So he's also got, you know, a potential cancer risk because they took so long in giving him the hepatitis C medicine. So, yeah, I do believe at this point, even though Judge Clemens, who is not really doing what she claims to be doing in that video, she knows that the justice system is rigged against poor and oppressed people, particularly Black people. Yet, at that hearing, she did the job of the prosecutor and believe wholeheartedly what the prosecutor has to say. They even said that they regularly pay witnesses. Excuse me? You know, for whatever reason they pay them, because on the records that we just discovered, one of the key witnesses, Robert Chobert, is asking the prosecutor, "Where's my money?" And this judge, Lucretia Clemens, Superior Court, supervising judge, actually has the nerve to say she believes that had no bearing on the outcome. That statement would have no bearing on the outcome of the trial. Does she think people are stupid? I'm not. The regular person, any jury who would hear that would buy that what he said makes any sense. That he's asking the prosecutor, "Where's my money?" And it just doesn't add up. She also, it's not that she doesn't believe that there was Blacks were struck from the jury, which they make up 40% of Philadelphia, and he struck the DA struck 71% of Blacks from that case. She says she's saying it is a time period, and Mumia's defense in 1995 or 1999 should have brought that claim about striking Blacks from the jury. She's saying it is a, you know, he's run out of time for that claim. So therefore, she's ready. She's already written her notes, a 31-page document, saying she's potentially going to drop, she's going to deny Mumia's appeal for a new evidentiary hearing that would lead to a new trial. So she's a very dangerous woman. She's concerned more about her class privilege than doing what she's charged to do, which is find out what really happened that night. And the only way you're going to find that out is to have a new trial, because everyone knows that Mumia did not have a fair trial, because the original trial judge, Judge Albert Sable, said, "I'm going to help them fry the N-word." And he said it in front of another judge, Richard Klein, and a court stenographer, Terry Moore Carter, who was a stenographer and overheard him say it.
We definitely need the people power. The people have to resolve this. So, sisters, what we're going to do right now, we're going to have to look at panelists and analysts, and they're going to have a question or comment they may like each one of y'all to respond to. They would direct that question directly either to one of y'all three, Sister Empress, Sister Jacqueline, and Sister Gwen. Okay, Brother Hakeem, you've been listening to the discussion. They're talking about Mumia Abu-Jamal's case and struggle. And also you have heard Sister Empress talking about upcoming work that they'll be doing at the UN and throughout the world. But anyway, your thoughts, your question or comment for any of our guests, Brother Hakeem.
Yeah, I just want to thank the sisters for their analysis in terms of underscoring the level of corruption and collusion that exists in the American legal justice system. Unfortunately, a lot of people believe that, in fact, America has the best legal system in the world. And unfortunately, when you underscore the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, it becomes very, very clear that that's not the case. But in any event, I have a specific question for Sister Empress. Of course, the sister alluded to the corrupt judge in terms of her unwillingness, to review the case, Mumia's case, favorably. But more importantly, there was a district attorney, Krasner, who at least articulated his desire in terms of seeing Mumia get a good, a decent trial, retrial. So essentially, Sister Empress, what happened to Larry Krasner in terms of, I understand the right wing has been after him precipitously, but what is the status of the DA, Larry Krasner?
Thank you, Brother Haki. So to jump right into that question right there, right now, Larry Krasner, who, of course, is the City of Philadelphia District Attorney, it appears he's going to be impeached. It has been passed in the legislative bodies here, and it's looking pretty bad for him. Now, we don't know if that is as a result of several things. Now, note, he could have made a decision himself while he was, you know, pretty prominent or pretty much in place. He could have made a decision himself to make a move to help Mumia, and he did not. But again, and I want to point this out, that one of the reasons why we're able to have this hearing that's now getting ready to take place, which again is really the third time. The second one was the first time in October. It was postponed from the 16th, I think, to something like the 26th. That's when at the 26th, the present judge is saying, well, you need to come back and show me more stuff. Well, keeping in mind what she was shown was from approximately six boxes that was found after all this time, filled with information, evidence, and so forth. One of the things that was mentioned earlier by one of the sisters was, in fact, a note that indicated that, you know, one of the witnesses was wondering, where's my money? So this is some of the information that the lawyers presented to in order to get where we're at now. And this judge is still saying this is not enough, even though six boxes were found. Now, again, going back to Larry Krasner, it was under his watch, or it happened when he became district attorney. Somehow these mysterious six boxes popped up. And in that, there was quite a bit of evidence and information in there that kind of conveyed and solidified the fact that Mumia was set up. So to fast forward again, so this judge is now playing games. My two sisters, who I love so much, and that's why we work so well together, because as they mentioned, you know, one sister, Gwen, says she doesn't know why certain things, or Sister Jacqueline said that, you know, she's appealing for their love and all of that. I'm totally different. I don't believe none of that. So that's why we all balance each other out. I have no faith in none of them people about nothing. But the one point that Sister Jacqueline did make that I do get is the woman is a mother. And so based on that, maybe she might, that might resonate. But all that other stuff, love and all that, no, I ain't buying none of that, not for them. And I could be wrong. Don't get me wrong. I'm just giving you my spin on it. But again, Brother Haki, Larry Krasner's in trouble. He's in serious trouble because the Republican people didn't want him in the first place. And now the Democrats, his own people, don't want him in. They say he's too progressive.
Wow. Listen, you talk about absurdity. I mean, what can you say when people express that kind of inane kinds of commentary? What can you say? But my question to the sister, I think Sister Jacqueline, who's the former Catholic, or maybe she's still practicing Catholicism.
You are Catholic.
Okay, well, one of the things in terms of the history of Catholicism, people tend to be very, very conservative. So I got to ask you, sister, what is it about you specifically that endowed you to actually confront some of the inequities or some of the problems associated with Catholicism to the point where you're willing to actually take a stand for a so-called alleged murderer? So what transpired in your life to make you take a stand in terms of politically defending Mumia?
Okay. Can you hear me? Okay. So.
Yeah.
What made me take a stand about Mumia was that when my husband wanted to marry me, my husband is a divorcee, and they basically told me that he would have to get an annulment and that his children would be bastards, okay? I said, excuse me? Who is my husband? My husband is the father of Full Force, okay? Full Force, Grammy Award-winning people. All of a sudden, they're going to have to become bastards because of the Catholic Church. You understand?
I got you.
Okay? That wasn't going to happen. It was wrong. It was wrong. So we found ourselves a good African-American, what is it, female preacher who was beautiful, didn't put us through any hoops. You understand what I'm saying? No hoops at all. Respected my husband, respected my stepson, okay? So, I mean, that was like the beginning of it. The second thing with the Catholic Church was my father, you're talking about, he was the Catholic of Catholics, devoted. He was a deacon of deacons, went to their special program. So this is like one step under being a priest, okay? Then they gave him a psychological test, which he passed with flying colors. And they said there must be something wrong with him to get 100%. Okay, this is a black man who is a college professor, genius level intelligence. And that's how they, you know, respect him. And after all the respect he gave that fucking church, okay? So, I'm sorry. I know I shouldn't curse, but I'm angry. I'm fucking angry with them, okay? Fucking angry. And I'm fucking angry with that damn judge. Dare she say she's Catholic. And she says the Beatitudes. Fuck her. Fuck her. You know? Fuck her. Big time. Big time.
Don't hold back, sister. But thank you, sisters, very much for your responses.
Okay. That's me being a Catholic woman. A black Catholic woman. Okay? More power to black Catholics. Because we really know it comes from Africa. The whole religion comes from Africa. Fucking lying, pathological Catholic church. Fuckers! The man thing. Shit. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay.
All right, so we're going to make our transition to our next panel and see if he may have any questions or comments for you, Brother Moses. We can turn the mic over to you, Brother Moses. The mic is yours. Are you with us, Brother Moses?
Brother Moses got out of Dodge.
Okay, while we're waiting for Brother Moses, give him the opportunity, let's move to Sister Eleanor. Question or comment, Sister Eleanor?
Well, so much was black Catholics, but I'm interested in Mumma was born Wesley Cook and was a former member of the Black Panthers. Now he's represented by, is it a Judith Ritter and Samuel Spittle? Now, I understand, and I don't understand much about law, so maybe you can answer this. Maybe the judge is giving them a way out because the two boxes, you mentioned there were boxes found in 2018 or several boxes that were withheld during the trial previously. Is that what you said?
And 32.
How many?
32 boxes were withheld. And there's probably more. We know they have more.
And that the judge suggested that this information had already been heard in other courts. How was that possible if the boxes, 32 boxes, were just found in 2018? What courts were they? Was this information presented? And had there been, what actions had this been presented? And does Judith Ritter intend to, she can claim a mistrial in December for just the judge's failure to enter these 32 boxes, correct? Well, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. That's a question. Is there a possibility of a mistrial in December simply because of the judge's failure to allow the admission of the 32 boxes of evidence?
No. The answer to that question is no, meaning what's being placed before the judge is some of the information that was found in conjunction to previous information. It is up to her to now make that decision. That's what part of these hearings are about. the information, and see how we're able to get to where we're at now is the fact that these boxes were found, or this information was found. This is how we're even able to get to this point. Now, it is up to her to hear what the lawyers are saying based on findings, etc. She can determine whether or not what they have discovered or found is something that is new, different, or whatever. Because even though those previous boxes were not found, that doesn't mean that they didn't contain information, according to her now. I'm saying according to them. That doesn't mean that those boxes still didn't contain information that was already submitted. You see the game here?
During the trial, while Ritter suggested tainted evidence, prosecutors for the case, they claimed that the new evidence was, it was the prosecutors that, my question is, was it the prosecutors that claimed the evidence had already been heard, because the judge couldn't claim it unless somebody put it forward? Who claimed that the evidence had already been heard?
The judge did.
Who claimed it for the judge agree or to go to suggest such a thing? The prosecutor.
So remember, there have been previous hearings prior to now. So there was times where the prosecutor did, in fact, provide their side of it, but also keep in mind that that some of this information is also is filed, so the judge has to read different things that the prosecution has submitted, because see, they have to submit documentation or rebuttals or what have you. So keep in mind, there's been like two or three, I don't remember exactly how many, other hearings.
Bottom line,
hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. We can hear you. Yes,
okay,
we can hear
you. Okay, great. The bottom line is the judge is not interested in providing Mumia with an evidentiary hearing, which would also lead to a new trial. She's not interested in that. She's advocating she's believing what the prosecution has to say rather than looking at the whole picture and giving Mumia the opportunity for them to argue the issue and to speak with Robert Chopra, because he's alive and well. And he can tell us, well, what did you mean by where is my money? Were you actually paid a stipend, or what happened? And he was also given favorable treatment in regard to his pending legal matters, which was dropped. We need to hear, what does that mean? We have evidence. They have pictures showing you not at the scene. So,
Can I ask a question?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so my whole thing is that this judge is elected, okay? And just like all lawyers, she had to pass the bar, okay? Just like my mother, okay? So why isn't it being brought up in front of the Pennsylvania Bar Association, okay? Because it just seems like that these so-called judges are able to get away with things. Why aren't we going after them? If she allows this to happen, why is she allowed to stay in office or in her position as a judge?
That's a good question. I guess she would have to, some with judges, it also, don't forget, it has to be a thing where you, like if she stole somebody's money,
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, obviously she would have to be, and that person wanted to sanction her. She could go to the Bar Association and they would definitely have to do an investigation. But because this is a criminal matter, and these people are endowed with a lot of power, there's really not much. She's going by the law. And like Ralph Pointer always says, the law is what they say it is at the time. So she
okay.
is legally within her.
She is going by the law. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
She is
Sorry.
Going by. She's going by precedent that Mumia, yeah. the evidence that we have is time barred. There's a limit. You know, there's always a limit about what you can file at a certain time. There's a limit on how much evidence can be admitted into the record because was it submitted on time? Well, obviously, this new information about jury selection, keeping blacks off the jury, and this statement about this so-called witness, we didn't know it at the time. So for her, you know, to say, well, it's not time, it's a time bar issue, she's missing the point about it's the merit of the case. She's not interested in hearing what we have to basically say. She wants Mumia's attorneys, I guess, to pull a rabbit out of the hat and find some kind of Pennsylvania law, because she said
yes.
it hid the rebuttal. Their appeal has to focus on Pennsylvania law regarding
okay.
The new evidence. So they had a tough road to climb to figure out, they had to dig, well, me as lawyers I'm talking about, had to dig in deep to find some kind of Pennsylvania law that would allow this judge to see that it is timely. And Mumia's lawyers didn't have that information previously, so therefore they couldn't have litigated it. You can't litigate something that you don't know, or you and they hid the evidence. So it's, you know, like they said, it's, you know, it's what they the law is at the time, and they have every avenue to deny Mumia, you know, what is rightfully his, which is definitely a new trial. They know Mumia got a raw deal. She knows that. She's not stupid. She knows what goes on in these cases, and she very well knows Judge Albert Sable's history of racism, sexism, and homophobic. So, you know, that's very well, you know, noted and documented, and he never denied it. The man never denied it. So, you know. Hopefully,
okay, sisters, what we're going to have to do is we're going to take one more question from one of our panelists, Brother Anthony. Then we're going to have to go to a station break. All right, Brother Anthony, any comments or questions to our sisters as it relates to Mumia case?
Yes. I have a comment based on what I've heard to this point. It seems
okay.
like the judge that's making this decision on whether to grant Mumia a new trial is biased, it seems that there is little recourse that the lawyers for Mumia have, unfortunately. Based upon Pennsylvania law, and it's rather unfortunate because he spent about 40 something years in prison for something he did not commit.
All right, thank you, Brother Andrew, for your comment. And at this point in time, we're going to take a revolutionary culture break, and when we come back, we will continue with the discussion, and we want to ask our guest today to speak to some of the things they are doing in terms of trying to get the people to come forward to help build this case in support of Mumia, and get an update again from Sister Empress in terms of some of her upcoming projects and how people can support it. Brother Africa, you listen to Africa on the Move, and we'll be right back.
before the shit start, before it get dark, before they hit you with the pitchfork. Better crip walk, crip this walk. Is real talk. Smoke, push, ambush, then we peel off. Niggas still rolling with the wheels off. Always looking out for the crisscross. I'm a bigger boss than Rick Ross. Always winning, nigga get lost. It's the warlord, bring the voodoo. When I bail through, it's crazy like Bellevue. What they tell you, leave that boy alone. Like Home Alone, yeah. Fuck a skull and bone. Arrest the president, you got the evidence. That nigga is Russian intelligence. When it rains, it pours. Did you know the new white was orange? Boy, you're showing your horns. They trying to replace my halo with thorns. You so basic with your vape stick. Let's go ape shit in the matrix. Arrest the president, arrest the president, arrest the president. You got the evidence. Arrest the president, arrest the president, arrest the president. You got the evidence. I took back my ice and all black tonight. That's right, some niggas gotta sacrifice. Not a criminal, no, I'm a seminal, yeah. I was free once, now I'm clinical. You so technical, this was Mexico. Now everywhere I go is owned by Texaco. Fuck them and the rest of you, yeah. I turn a phone to a best hopper. I'ma roll with the aliens. Man, fuck these homo sapiens. They don't really wanna make friends. All they want is a Mercedes Benz. All they want is they dividends and decibels. Fuck these citizens. They'll treat us like hooligans. Throw him in, they don't care what school he in. These people don't play fair. It ain't even fair at the state fair. Give a young nigga gray hair. That's why I'm here. Make your ass lay there. You better stay there. Close your fucking eyes like it's daycare. Make myself clearer than Shakespeare. I'm here to take money, even fake hair. So desperate is what I'm left with. For the record, you affected. Who you elected is so septic. So full of shit, I can't accept it. Arrest the president, arrest the president, arrest the president. You got the evidence. Arrest the president, arrest the president, arrest the president. You got the evidence. Arrest the president, arrest the president, arrest the president. You got the evidence. Arrest the president, arrest the president, arrest the president. You got the evidence. I reside on the west side.
West side.
I murder with my third eye. Niggas so fly, get a bird's eye. I make them scream bloody murder. Let's meet at the White House. Run in and turn the lights out. Man, they treat it like a trap house,
yeah.
These motherfuckers never take the trash out.
Damn.
They just cash out and mash out. Nigga, take your drugs and pass out. Niggas love to go that fast route,
yeah.
I see you when your black ass get out. Homie, you play too much,
yeah.
Why these devils, they doing way too much.
Watch,
most of them won't say too much. Why they steady planning, God knows what.
God knows what.
That's why I roll with the real ones. Real ones, trying to reach millions. Real ones, trying to make billions. Real ones, dressed like civilians.
Arrest the president, arrest the president, arrest the president. You got the evidence. Arrest the president, arrest the president, arrest the president. You got the evidence.
In chains, living in pain, today is the same, and nothing ever changes. Hung by a noose, can't tell the truth, filled with abuse, and everywhere there's danger. How long can this go on? When will the light I see? I know I must be strong to last through my journey, yeah, to last through my journey, yeah. Time will arrive when we must decide to get off the ride and stop going through these changes. Must prepare and learn how to care, for soon we'll be there where our lives won't be in danger. And when the light is clear, oh how beautiful
I will be to know that I've been here and made it through my journey, yeah, and made it through my journey, yeah, 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 made it through my journey.
Pellerino, a bloodline across the waters, from Benin to Salvador Bahia, a scar across the face of the earth. Pellerino, the place they brought the Africans, the place where they tried to make them slaves. Pellerino, you can feel the whip, hear the cries and see the blood in the red clay. The clay that holds the stones together is African. And each stone is a bone from a people called slaves. Pellerino was the place where death came to dwell. His neighbors did not complain, for he was a way out. From the cold gray cobblestone streets to the lifeless cathedrals, tall walls of demons called angels, haunted visions of white faces, crucifying Jesus again and again. But in the sacrifice of this blood, of this dance with death, comes life more rich, more pure, more alive, where death spent many lonely nights pacing the floors of his funeral parlor, waiting for someone to die. Pellerino, a French word called the place of torture, became a place of strength, a place where faces of white saints became faces of black gods, where haunted visions and demons became healing visionaries and orishas from the motherland. And Jesus rejoined his kinfolk and was reborn and baptized in the sound of sensual skin turned up to dance, to inspire a fire like the sun, pronouncing his presence. Pellerino was the tongue of the flame, licking the eyes of those who have tried to remain blind, shining a light on a spirit that would not be denied. No, the chains did not break the spirit, did not enslave the music of my soul, did not shackle the will of my freedom, did not tarnish the glow of my gold. And all the Pellerinos in Africa, in Europe, in North and South America cannot destroy the majesty of my people, the love of my people, shining like the sun everywhere we go, everywhere we go. When the light is clear, oh, how beautiful I will be to know that I've been here and made it through my journey, yeah, and made it through my journey, yeah, 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 yeah.
We'd like to welcome you back to Africa on the Move. I'm your host, Brother Africa. We'd like to do a couple of announcements and a little bit of house cleaning before we continue our discussion. As we're talking about what's going on with the case of our brother Mumia Abu-Jamal, we just would like to remind everyone that on this day in 1977, the United Nations voted first unanimous arms boycott of South Africa and Zambia. Yes, that happened in 1977, November the 4th. Also, we want to remind everyone that if you haven't already joined yet, please make sure you contact the African Awareness Association as we join with them as they go on their annual Freedom Travel Trip, Freedom Ride to Cuba from January the 23rd to the 30th, 2023. Please email them at AfricaAwarenessAssociation2@gmail.com, or you can call 804-549-7492 or 202-714-9435. We'll talk a little bit more about this upcoming trip later on during this program. So at this point in time, what we'd like to do, we'd like to continue the discussion with our sister Empress, Gwen, and Jacqueline, as they talk about the case of Mumia, as well as what's going on with the Million Woman Marching Movement. So right now, what we're going to do, we got about 15 minutes left for this particular subject, and we're going to ask Sister Empress if she can take this time, a few minutes, to tell us particularly some of the programs and projects that's going on with MWM and how the people can support it. So for the next 5 minutes, Sister Empress, we're going to give you the mic. The mic is yours, Sister Empress. Are you there, Sister Empress?
All right. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Okay, so again, this coming Saturday, which is International Human Rights Day, we will enact one of several campaigns. And, of course, this one is geared specifically to bringing greater attention to the issues around COINTELPRO, which, of course, does include our political prisoners. The other issues that we're going to focus on that day is the justice for Black veterans, as well as justice for Black farmers. Again, there are 21 areas of genocide that we've cited. And so we're going to be dealing with a few of those on Saturday. Again, COINTELPRO, justice for Black farmers, justice for our Black veterans. And also, we're raising the question to you, family, what are your thoughts about the student forgiveness or whatever it's called? That was one of our platform issues before it became popular, meaning you know, our demand for reparatory justice is also that all Black student loan debt needs to be rescinded. We didn't say forgiven. We said rescinded. Before other people get, and this was, again, we didn't see this coming at the time, but this was our position for the past 5 years. And we're saying now, and we are encouraging our parents in particular and our students to say something. Don't just sit back and let this happen, meaning how on earth does other people get student loan forgiveness or, you know, whatever, and not our students first. Our students, the descendants of our students, put in blood, sweat, and tears, not everybody else. And so for our students in the first place to have to pay tuition the same amount that others do when it wasn't their ancestors that were enslaved, that right in itself is questionable. But definitely no one should be getting any kind of student loan forgiveness or anything even close to that before our students, our parents, our families. So that's just a sidebar, but that's one of the other issues that we're bringing forward. Since it's one of the things that's hot in the news today. The other concerns, of course, is the 13th Amendment. That's one of our issues because keeping in mind slavery is, in fact, still legal under the 13th Amendment. And so that needs to be abolished. So, again, Saturday, we'll start at 12 o'clock noon, and it'll be a rally. We will hear some of the letters from some of the young adults, from the children that will be coming. And again, we encourage others to support, particularly the children, the young adults coming. Funds are needed to help curtail costs for them coming and being in New York and so forth for a few days. And so I'd like to give out that information, if I can, Brother Africa, where they can send. Whatever donations that you have is greatly appreciated. It goes directly to the center. If you're using PayPal, you just go to PayPal and put in, once you get to the PayPal site, you put in Elaine Legacy Center. Again, Elaine Legacy Center. And it'll go directly to the group that is sponsoring or bringing the children, the young adults. If you want to write a check, you can also do that as well. And that, too, would be addressed to Elaine Legacy Center. And I have to find the address for you, and I'll do that before we close out. But that's the key thing that is really needed for right now to assist in the children being able to come. Well, they're definitely coming, but we just need additional funds to just help secure some other things for them.
Thank you, Sister Empress. Sister Jacqueline, any additional information you would like to share with our listening audience concerning the meal, and how can they get in touch with you if they would like to help you and
sure.
your group to come into our community? And
sure.
To,
I basically run the Mumia Health Committee, and what that basically means is there are about 12 of us, and Sister Julia Wright is the founder of it, and Dr. Ricardo Alvarez is one of our major doctors, and we have a few other doctors on there also, Mark Taylor, Dr. Joy James, and so on. What we are interested in are people who would be interested in being part of our committee. What we do is we are basically known for letters, writing letters, and relationships. We write to the prison. We write to whomever we need to. We now have what we call town hall meetings. We had Jalil Montekim. We also had in November Laura Whitehorn. And we learned from these released political prisoners on how it guides us how we will deal in the future with Mumia's case and others like him. Please contact us at Mumia Health Committee. At Mumia Health Committee at gmail.com. The Mumia Health Committee is also helping to deal with bringing the puppet to various locations, including what we're going to be doing at the UN on Saturday. So we say all of this costs money. Any kind of donations you'd like to give helps everything, from the maintenance to the housing of it to everything else, so that we can continue to bring this giant puppet to as many events as possible. We've already been to close to about 8 different rallies and demonstrations all over, from Philadelphia to New York and so on and so forth. Okay. The other thing I was going to say is please don't hesitate to write the governor, the outgoing governor of Pennsylvania, and the new governor of Pennsylvania about this particular case, and get your friends and your family to also write about it. Let them know that this is on our radar. Don't back down. Really, don't back down. I also would suggest that you write to the judge. Now, I know that the group Love Not Fear, Jamal Hart, who is Mumia's grandson, is going to be delivering some letters to the judge's chamber. So perhaps you can go through that means, through lovenotfear, I believe, at gmail.com. Or if you don't want to go through that, do it on your own. To do whatever you need to do to get the message through to this woman that she needs to do the right thing immediately. Final thing is, who else is there? Oh, please don't forget to write to the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, okay? Please write to them, because that documentary is atrocious, and I don't believe they really know Mumia and what this situation is about. And if she is such a devout Catholic as she says she is, then it would be wonderful if the Catholic Church got behind this and then made her think twice about what she's doing, since she's such a devout Catholic with the Beatitudes and bullshit. But we're not going to go there right now. So those are the things that I'm saying. We love all of you. We're all inclusive. If you're an ally with us, we're an ally with you. We're trying to get Mumia and all other political prisoners out. Understand that, out. We will be interviewing Senator Street on Tuesday about the bill SB 835, Compassionate Release. Please write to Senator Street. Please do not hold back and write to Senator Street and ask him, how can Mumia Abu-Jamal and other prisoners like him be included in
that particular bill. We're not talking about end of life. We're talking about now, okay? Now, right now, okay? Put pressure on these elected officials. Without you, they would not be. Understand that. Demand from them. Final thing is this. I was in the chamber. I was not in the judge's chamber, but I sat in the hearing, as I said. And one thing that the judge demanded was that Mumia's lawyers find cases in New York, Pennsylvania State, based on Pennsylvania law. Well, yes, that's one way of doing things, but it wasn't wrong what they did by bringing in examples from all over. You understand? Okay, so I hope all of you will become very aware of the case. Whatever the turnout is, become aware. And if it doesn't turn out the way we need it to turn out, please, please, please go after that judge's license. Please, okay, write to the Bar Association. Have a major investigation on her and anyone else, really, okay? Do not sit back. Do not sit back. You are a powerful, you are all powerful beings. And if we all unite, we become an army of a huge, full force of people that makes the change. Without you, it can't happen. If we say nothing and do nothing, she will always be able to get ahead. The Dells will get ahead. The governors will get ahead. We need to really become proactive and see our power. See your power. Get Mumia out. That's all I'm going to say. Get him out. It's the power of the people that's going to get him out. And when the 16th comes, show up. Show up. Okay? There shouldn't be like 100 people. There should be at least 10,000 or 20,000 people outside that courthouse demanding his freedom. Demanding. And there should be press from all over the world to let them know that we are not playing. And if it doesn't go our way, let the street and the people explode, because you do not have to accept it. Explode. Have a nice evening.
Thank you, my sister. Next, we're going to be Sister Gwen. You'll find the thought, Sister Gwen.
We will be. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello? Okay.
Yes, we can. We can hear you.
We will be having an online event on the anniversary of the frame up on December 9th. And you can go to Linktree/Mumia to reserve your spot and register. Linktree, linktr.ee/Mumia. linktr.ee/Mumia. And Mumia is spelled M-U-M-I-A. M-U-M-I-A. Because I realize most people don't know how to spell his name unless you've been, involved with the case. You know what? A bit of good news. I can tell you this. I keep forgetting. Mumia's papers were deposited at Brown University. And they will be on able to be reviewed after they are archived, I believe, next year. So Brown University had the courage and the interest in securing Mumia's papers. So Mumia's not going to go anywhere anytime soon, but at least what he had to say will be preserved in the manner that it should be. Also, Johanna Fernandez's papers will be there as well at Brown University. So that is a bit of good news for him and the world, if they want us to be able to study what Mumia had to say about incarceration. So people should be aware of that. But yes, we will be having an event to remember what happened to Mumia. But it's going to be focused on other political prisoners as well. Linda Peltier, there'll be a representative speaking about Linda Peltier's case.
as well as Kamal Siddiqui, Veronza Bowers, Ed Poindexter, and Imam Jamil Alameen. And I believe Brian Arroyo also, he's in the same penitentiary as Mumia is currently. And he was given life in prison for the death of a child in his care. And he's known Mumia for quite some time. And he's quite brilliant himself. And that event actually on Friday, the 9th, will start at 7. We'll start at 7 p.m. And you can go to, like I said, linktree.com/Mumia, linktr.ee/Mumia, M-U-M-I-A. And we will be there at the UN to support Empress Filet and Jackie's puppet, excuse me. So, yeah, so for those who can make it out to New York, at the UN, please show support, because it's more than about Mumia. I mean, this is, you know, when they're going after Mumia, they're going after us. It's really about killing any thought of thinking differently. That's why they're after Mumia. They know that he's not guilty of this crime. They're going after him because he's a veteran Black Panther, a revolutionary, which is, you dare not speak about the awful things that go on in this country, and that, you know, the police are sacrosanct, and they shouldn't be, because they, you know, they do a lot of criminal activity. They kill 1,000 people every year, you know, and most of them are Black unarmed people.
Before you leave, can y'all quickly speak a little bit to the international community about this injustices against political prisons in the United States, and the same issue of political prisons internationally as it relates to U.S. capitalist, you know, imperialist policies globally?
Well, what I can say about that is that Mumia has international support from Germany, France has named the street after him, and Congress, they had the nerve to demand that they'd rescind that, and the people in Saint-Denis said, you know, go F yourself. We love Mumia, and we believe in his innocence, and the sign is going to stay exactly where it's at. They went as far as passing a resolution against Saint-Denis for naming a street after Mumia. You know, they're so idiotic. Like, they don't have bigger fish to fry. Yeah, but Mumia and Leonard Peltier, he enjoys international support. And the good news about Leonard, I can tell you this, 6 senators have come out in support and encouraging President Biden to grant clemency to Leonard Peltier. The man is 78 years old and has spent about 45 years in prison. He's in very poor health. His health is worse than Mumia's. I believe he's in a wheelchair. He has diabetes, and he has an aneurysm issue. He has a lot of health issues, and he spent, you know, quite a number of years in them. He's 78 years old. He's an old man. And he was accused and convicted of killing 2 FBI agents. And Clinton was supposed to grant him clemency, but he chickened out because of the strong FBI opposition for him to gain release. But, and also a former prosecutor. The former prosecutor in the case supports Leonard's case for clemency. And he believes that Leonard did not killed those two FBI agents. This is a former prosecutor. So a lot of pressure is on Biden to do the right thing before the new year. And I believe they're going to set – Biden's eventually going to come to his senses, even though he's 80 years old. And I believe that's going to happen because there's just a lot of pressure on him to do the right thing. And the United States generally, what they do, they punish countries who think differently, who want to go a different route, like Venezuela is still under sanctions. Because they want to go a different route. They want to take care of the people's needs. They don't, it's not about, you know, capitalism and it's, you know, sucking every drop of oil, you know, out of the ground. So a few people can become rich and the planet suffers. They have it, and Cuba has it. They have a different mentality. That's why Cuba is still under sanctions because they believe in socialism and meeting the needs of the many instead of the needs of the few. It's a different, you know, mentality. They have free education, free health care. We don't have that. We should. It's the taxes that we pay. So, yeah, Mumia is and our political prisoners, they're a treasure because they had the audacity to think differently and to stand up for oppressed people, black people specifically. And that's why they went after them. And all thank right. you for thank having us on.
Thank you, my sister. Sister Epis, we can come back to you for you make a closing remarks. We're going to remind you that also maybe speak a little bit to the program where you ask your sisters from around the world to join in with you as you do this program dealing with women issues. So your final statement, Sister Empress, the mic is yours.
Before I give you updates on MWM, I just want to remind people, again, Sister mentioned to write to the judge. Again, her name is Lucretia Clemens. Room 80Q, Court of Common Pleas of Philadelphia, and the address is 1301 Filbert Street, Philadelphia, PA 19105. If you didn't get any of that, feel free to email us at nationalmwm@aol.com, or you can just go online to Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas, and you can put in Lucretia Clemens is the judge's name. You'll get the information there as well. Also, again, for contributions to go for the young adults that will be coming, that can be sent via PayPal to Elaine Legacy Center. Again, Elaine Legacy Center. If you want to send a check, you do the same. Again, Elaine Legacy Center, P.O. Box 42, Elaine, Arkansas, 72333. In regards to what's going on with MWM, of course, we launched our 25-year anniversary commemoration this past October 25th. We have been servicing and fighting and building for 25 straight years without a grant, without corporate sponsoring. It has been very difficult to do, but that was the mission that was given to us on an ancestral level, and we've done it. Now, after two decades, we go to the next level in bringing forward the first global movement for women and girls of African descent, which was always the intention. It was never about just a day. Now we're connecting with sisters globally, and in doing that, addressing many of the issues that specifically affect our women and girls, but also, of course, we never separate our work from our families and communities. So simultaneously, we are dealing with the issues of gender violence and abuse, the education of our women, business development, but also other issues that's relevant to our people, our families, the communities, health, and other kinds of things. So 2023, we come forward with the Million Woman World March. And we've been meeting now for the past month, getting ready for that. Today we had sisters from Cameroon. We've had folks from Ghana, Nigeria, Trinidad, Tobago. And now we're going to be moving forward even more so as I go on a national tour starting in January. We'll be going, of course, throughout the U.S., establishing our movement and also furthering the establishment of our international connection. So essentially there will be the Million Women World March will take place in 2023. So far we have three continents that this will be happening at simultaneously in October of 2023. And then in the U.S., there'll be a major location, but there'll be kinds of events, satellite events going on in every region. And so as we proceed, we'll certainly keep the family here at Africa on the Move on the update. But if you wish to make a donation, we certainly appreciate that. Again, we've never had a grant, never had corporate sponsoring. There's not a Black women's organization that functions on a national and international level in as many cities and states as we do that can say that. And that is totally African-centered. Our Cash App is $HOT1111. Again, $HOT1111. And our PayPal is nbhrproject@gmail.com. Again, nbhrproject@gmail.com, and that's for our National Black Human Rights Project.
And we'd like to thank you, Sister Empress, Sister Jacqueline, and Sister Gwen for coming forward today and sharing with us what's going on in your world and your community and the update on the Mamiya movement. So until next time, you can always reach out to us on Sundays at 7 p.m. from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And please spread the word that Africa on the Move is here for our communities. So right now what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick revolutionary culture break. And when we come back, we're going to finish out this segment on what's going on in our community and the world with the rest of our panelists. And we'll close out with our final thoughts. This is Brother Africa. This is Africa on the Move. And we've come back. We will talk a little bit with our panelists, what's going on in our world community, and make a few announcements. And we'll be closing out. We'll be right back.
If you think of the Middle East in this modern time, you can't help but say the word Palestine. People there have lost their land, some have lost their home. They live in other countries, their freedom almost gone. Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love, needs our love. Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love. There seems to be no answer to give us the reason why people cannot live, so no one has to die. We've got to take a stand for freedom, take a stand for truth, take a stand for justice. That's what we've got to do, 'cause Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love, needs our love. Palestine, Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love. People of all countries, of every race and creed, we need a new beginning. Let us plant the seed. Plant the seed of love and let that love seed grow. Plant the seed for everyone so all the world will know that Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love, needs our love. Palestine, Palestine needs her freedom, needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love.
Is my king, is my one, yes, he's my father, yes, he's my son, so I can talk to him, cause he understands everything I go through, and everything I am, my support system, I can't live without him, the best thing since sliced bread, is his kiss, his hugs, his lips, his touch, and I just want the whole world to know about my life.
We to welcome you back to Africa on Your Move. Brother Africa, see that we're going to take the heat. As we define it, we're going to stand behind it. We may not give you what you want, but we definitely give you what you need. Now, we can continue the discussion. First and foremost, we'd like to make a few quick announcements and remind everyone to join us in the African Awareness Association as they take their feeder ride trip, educational travel challenge to Cuba from January 23rd to the 30th, 2023. And for a few minutes on why we're doing this trip, we can bring in Brother Haki. Brother Haki, can you speak a few minutes on why it's important we ask the African community to support this noble cause of showing our solidarity with our brothers and sisters in Cuba with the African Awareness Association? Brother Haki.
Yes, sir. Well, essentially, we ask the community, you know, to support this trip to Cuba simply because the reality is it's in our best interest to support such a program. You know, we're under tremendous amount of strain. The inequities in the society have grown leaps and bounds. The difference between those who have and don't have is exploding. The question is for us in terms of, you know, what are we doing with a system which was diametrically opposed to the interests of people based upon skin color, and what do we do in the context of that reality? So Cuba also is an example in terms of possibilities, in terms of what we can actually do in terms of being able to withstand, you know, these kind of inequities that are coming our way. Clearly, when we talk about Cuba in terms of the role it has in terms of facilitating humanity, Cuba is outstanding in that regard. Certainly, you know, one of the things in the context of America, we talk about individual rights superseding all other rights. It's refreshing to know there are states like Cuba that stresses the importance of the group as opposed to the individual. So in that context, we can learn a lot in terms of you know, what Cuba is all about. But more importantly, to actually go there and to see for yourself, you know, the benefits of having such a system in place in terms of how it impacts the people, in terms of they interact with one another, the way they work with one another, the way they support one another. So clearly, there's something to be had in terms of the greatness of the Cuban system, and we encourage people to go there and see for themselves firsthand, you know, how Cuba is, in fact, a beacon on the hill. So we encourage people to go to Cuba, see for themselves firsthand, you know, if they have any questions relating to issues pertaining to geopolitics, what's going on, you know, in Cuba, what's going on in the world. The Cuban people are uniquely qualified to discuss all those things of international nature because the education system is such a strong component in terms of the Cuban life. And so, therefore, the people are in a very good position to articulate, you know, their concerns in terms of what they see as problematic or things that have to be addressed when it comes to the needs of humanity. So we encourage people to go to Cuba to see for themselves firsthand the greatness that is Cuba.
And for more information, you can email them at AfricanAwarenessAssociation2@gmail.com, or you can call 804-549-7492 or 202-714-9435. The African Awareness Association has been organizing these freedom rides for over 25 years to Cuba. So bring in your new year by doing something special. I'm making that trip. It's a life changer. Also, in terms of any announcements, we can go to the D.C. Metro Coalition in Defense of the Cuban Revolution. Ask Brother Moses and Sister Eleanor, are there any announcements or updates that you would like to make? Brother Moses and Sister Eleanor.
I don't have any announcements as of this moment. We're still in the planning stages. I will keep you abreast as I find out.
Okay, thank you, Brother Moses. And Sister Eleanor, anything you would like to add to that?
Ditto. We will keep you abreast of upcoming events. Thank you.
And Brother Anthony, briefly speak a little bit about your organization. Anything going on in your organization that public need to know about, the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC? Are you with me, Brother Anthony? While we're waiting for Brother Anthony, what we're going to do at this point in time is that we're going to
continues the discussion that I raised earlier at the beginning of this program around the issue of what's going on in our world community. And it's a question around the Virginia governor is putting in some kind of new legislation where there will be no teaching of the history of Martin Luther King and the so-called civil rights movement from the grade level K through 5 or the 5th grade. Brother Haki gave him his response on, you know, the implication of that. We'd like to hear the other response on that. We'll go to Brother Anthony. Brother Anthony, what is your response to this whole question of coming up with new laws and no longer want to teach any civic or history as relates to the history of Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement? Your response from K to 5. Okay, we still have a problem with Brother Anthony. Let's go to Sister Eleanor. Your response, Sister Eleanor.
Well, first of all, kids don't learn civics in those grades. What they do learn are about national holidays. But what we see is really the expansion of fascism and the elimination of freedom of speech, because children learn about Arbor Day, Christmas, Thanksgiving, 4th of July, Labor Day, Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday. So the only way that could be stopped is that we will no longer discuss his holidays in school. Now, we remember this is an old argument under the U.S. imperialism, in that Arizona refused to recognize the King holiday for years until the federal government threatened to cut off all federal funding to Arizona. So now we hear Youngkin, who ran his campaign, was a neo-fascist campaign, run on key phrases, simple sentences similar to Hitler during the fascist period of the world in the early 20th century. So this is not about teaching civics, because that's not a subject children 1 through 6 learn in school. Again, they learn the Pledge of Allegiance. They learn the national anthem. You know, they learn the flags of the states, the capitals of the states in the 5th grade. Elementary school is the place where you learn reading, writing, the alphabet. First, you start off with the alphabet. Second, you start off with learning to recognize your name. And as you move along, as I said, you learn the holidays. So I think this is outrageous, and it takes advantage of parents who are so ignorant of what's going on with their children's education. And we don't have a standardized curriculum in this country. That is true. But we do have standardized education, and it covers those subjects that I mentioned. I don't know of any children that are learning American history. You know, we have to deal with education as we deal with human development and cognition. You know, we aren't cognitive at such an early age.
I don't know, Sister Eleanor, about you. When I was going through this process, we had civic and history on those levels. So maybe things may have changed, but they teach.
I don't know, Brother, because I was an educator and they weren't teaching it. So I don't know. I mean, I didn't say they're not teaching it. You don't have a book called Civics. You got a hell of an education if you have it through grades K to 5, something called civics or world history or U.S. history.
Okay, but no problem. Let's move to Brother Moses, see his response. Brother Moses, your response to this phenomenon.
Now, I think Sister Eleanor is more qualified in this area, being an educator and having hands-on experience with elementary schools system, et cetera. I think that, you know, the education sounds reasonable as way, the way she explained it, and I'm not going to try to do any more analysis of it than that. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, panelists, we come to the end of our time. This was part three of News You Can Use, and we still have some other items we want to discuss, so we're going to extend this to a fourth and final part for next week. But meanwhile, for tonight, we'd like to ask each one of you and our participant to still want to give our final thoughts for tonight, and we'll start off right now with you, Brother Moses, your final thoughts for tonight.
Thank you, thank you. It's been an interesting. I'm glad we were able to get the sisters on and the Million Women's March, etc. I think that we have to continue to read and study and grasp what's going on around us. As best possible. I know Trump this week decided he was to suspend the Constitution, unquote. So we live in some real outrageous times, and he's given up all semblance of democracy of a legal-based system into his total dictatorship. Anyway, I'll leave it right there. Thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you, Brother Moses, and you do the same. Next, we'll go to Sister Eleanor. Your final thoughts for tonight.
Well, I want to thank you for another wonderful show, and we learned tonight that there was Abu Jamal's trial was tainted by judicial bias and police and prosecutional misconduct, including withholding of evidence and bribing or coercing witnesses to lie. Now, this was a phenomenal show that we should learn this evening. And all of this came out apparently with these wonderful guests. So I'd like to thank you, Brother Africa, and your panelists and your guests for, letting the public know just what's happening. That Muma Abu Jamal, a former Black Panther, author of 12 books, is a political prisoner in the United States, and making it clear and articulate the conditions under which this can be legitimized. Again, the judicial bias, police, and prosecutional misconduct, including withholding of evidence and bribing or coercing witness, and a witness that, as the speaker said, had been completely, his case was completely dismissed. It's just phenomenal. And the judge, what my question was, And the other thing is, goes back to the Million Woman March, is I always talk about 1 billion standing, and the 1 billion standing are women and girls on planet Earth today, as well as Mother Earth herself. They stand in unity with protecting Mother Earth from the corporate and social environmental hazards, as well as gender and racial misogynist conduct, whether it be against the any community, and that this is a very, very important subject, and I'm glad that it continues to be examined on Africa on the Move, because right now I don't think the issue of women and children's rights are at the forefront in our country as they should be. And not only do we have starving children, but we also, unfortunately, have children being highly sexualized due to their appearance, and it's an outrage. So thank you so much for allowing me to participate in this forum, and I thank our listeners both here and abroad for tuning in, and love your comments, and I love your guests, and thank you so much, and have a very good evening.
We thank you, Sister Eleanor. You have also a very good evening. We thank you. Let's see if we can still get Brother Anthony trying one more time. Brother Anthony, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yes, can you give us your final thoughts for tonight, Brother Anthony?
Yes. In light of, you know, the imperialist offensive that's going on, our community is being attacked once again every way possible, and we must get organized. It sounds old, but it is the ultimate solution. We're fighting against a well-organized enemy, so we must get better organized politically, and we must share this information as much as possible among our people.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. And how they can find out more about your organization?
Certainly. You can find out more about the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC, by visiting our website, www.a-aprp-gc.org. And you can find out more about our political program, our political line, and the history of Pan-Africanism.
Thank you, Brother Anthony, and good night to you. And last but not least, our Brother Haki from the African Women Association. You'll find the thoughts, Brother Haki.
Well, Brother Africa, there is an interesting paradox taking place in society, and it's important that we discuss that. One of the things that's peculiar in terms of capitalism, one of the things you have to have in capitalism, money has to flow through the system. To give you an example, as recent as 2 years ago, remember the rent relief program and the paycheck protection program? Well, the rent relief program was all about providing money to renters to ensure that they could keep a place to stay because the economy essentially has shut down as a result of COVID. Now, the paycheck protection program was money given to businesses to ensure that their business continued to run. And in that context, a lot of landlords who had run large properties had access to that money. So the bottom line is that having access to all this money, $4 trillion, in fact, made it possible for this system to run relatively smoothly. In fact, without the $4 trillion expenditures, you know, into the system, capitalism would have collapsed, you know, 2 years ago. So the bottom line is that you got to have a flow of capital, you know, through the system in order for capitalism to exist. Now, here's the irony. Now, those programs are expiring. Particularly when we talk about the very huge impact, we got to look at the rent relief program in terms of, you know, renters who, you know, no fault of their own, you know, weren't able to pay their rent simply because of COVID-19 and all the businesses effectively shut down. Well, that program is ending in most places in the country. And what it means is that exponentially it's going to impact the level of homelessness in the society. And one of the things is we're very, very clear on that when we talk about homelessness, you know, the government doesn't have a vested interest, at least certainly not in the current context, in terms of preventing homelessness. And see, now what it is, it's all about capitalizing on profits. And so we have the perfect atmosphere in which businesses make tons and tons of money, at the expense of all other concerns. And so the needs of the people simply don't get addressed, and as a result, the homelessness increases. Now, when we talk about homelessness, here's the thing, the impact on the children. And here's the thing I think the community has to concern itself with, because when we talk about homelessness, expanding, and particularly when it comes to children, one of the things in terms of being all you can be as a child, to grow up in terms of, becoming successful, quote-unquote successful, one of the things that the opportunity or the chance to self-actualize is very, very important. Self-actualize, if you remember Durkheim's concepts, so you go through certain stages in terms of your development, in terms of certain things you have to have, like food, security, safety, so forth and so on. So depending on where you are in terms of having access to food security, those kind of things, it's determined to a large extent shape what kind of human being you become. So when we have a talk about situation of homelessness and kids on a very basic level don't have access to shelter, it has a very devastating impact on not only the future of those children, but also a very negative impact on the community. And so when we talk about the flow of money through the system, essentially what we're saying is that by giving you those programs, you're actually decreasing or you're eliminating the flow of money through capitalism. And when you eliminate that money through capitalism, all those things that people need vis-a-vis housing, education, shelter, jobs, all those things that people need in terms of becoming truly self-actualized disappears. And so the problem is for people in oppressed communities, particularly working class people, the problem is what are we going to do in the context of this reality? And so I don't think any amount of just turning the other cheek is going to quite cut it. I think we have to confront this reality, and we have to seriously think about what are we going to do in terms of addressing these issues. If we resort to individualism, the opposition is that I don't care, I only care about my child, I don't care about other children. If that is your position, then one thing you fundamentally have to understand is your child cannot exist in isolation of other children. In other words, what other children experience is going to impact your child. So we have a vested interest in making sure this issue gets addressed. It's going to take a lot of thought. It's going to take a shift in terms of value systems, because I know a lot of us are, in fact, individualistic. We grew up under this capitalist ethos which says, I don't give a damn about anybody else. It's all about me. It's just me. I don't care about anybody else. So we grew up with that ethos, and so we tend to think that when it happens to other people's children, it's not our concern. We have to fundamentally reject that ethos or that belief that, in fact, that that this individual pursuit in life is the way to go in terms of being truly healthy, truly happy, and truly prosperous people. So we have this struggle we have to go through. But in closing, Brother Africa, I always tell people, we have to unravel the matrix. We have to. The bottom line is that when we talk about the kind of pernicious planning that takes place, and we talk about the very pernicious mindset of individuals and musicians of power who facilitate all kinds of systems, specifically with the intent to deceive, to trick, we have to understand that these people, these systems, in fact, do exist. And the question is, do we understand these people? Do we understand the systems that they represent, the systems that they innovate? If we don't understand who these people are, the systems that they innovate, then we can reasonably begin to unravel the conditions that we have to confront in terms of being able to, in terms of survive or longevity in the society. So we got our work cut out for us, and I encourage people, to continue to read. I know it's a nerdy thing to do. I know in the context of 21st century, nobody wants to read. It's all about the computer. It's all about that kind of thing, and that's fine. There's a lot of information you can even glean from the computer. But it's just as importantly, go to a library and get books in which pertain a lot of all the information, which is also very, very vital in understanding precisely how the system's organized and how it works. Having said that, Brother Africa, you have a good night.
And you do the same, Brother Haki, and we thank you as well for your contributions to today's program, to our supportive friends and listening audience. This is Africa on the Move. It's under the banner of the African Awareness Association. You can hear this program every Sunday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, U.S. You also can support the work that we are doing by making a Cash App donation to dollar sign, capital L, small e, small e, small c, small r, small o, and small b. You can join and become a friend and supporter of Africa on the Move by emailing us at africaonthemove2@gmail.com. So you'd like to become a supporting friend, and we'll tell you precisely how. And we want to remind you again, if you have not signed up yet, fill out that application to join us on our Fever Ride trip to Cuba, please do so by emailing the African Awareness Association at association2@gmail.com. Request that particular application. Make that move right now. They'll be leaving on the 23rd to 30th of January, 2023. And last but not least, we just remind you again that with Pan-Africanism, once we achieve Pan-Africanism, is the key to all the suffering African people. It will set us free. Let's get organized, fight for Pan-Africanism. Until next week, we ask you to continue to struggle to go forward and backwards never. And we leave you with some liberation music. This has been Africa on the Move, your host.
It's all right. And he was taken from Africa, brought to America, fighting an arrival, fighting for survival. Said he was a buffalo soldier, jailed like a rasta. Buffalo soldier in the heart of America. Try to
no mind your nationality. You have got the identity of an African. 'Cause if you come from Clarendon, and if you come from Portland, and if you come from Westmoreland, you're an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind your nationality, you have got the identity of an African. 'Cause if you come from Trinidad, and if you come from So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind your complexion, there is no rejection, you're an African. 'Cause if your flexion high, 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 your flexion low, and if your flexion in mid, so don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind denomination, that is only segregation, you're an African. 'Cause if you go to the Catholic, and if you go to the Methodist, and if you go to the Church of God, you're an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind your nationality, I've got the identity of an African. We'll be right back.
Africa, 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 won't you be free?
I'm a
Mama Africa, Africa, won't you be free? Africa, 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 won't you be free? Mama Africa, Africa, won't you be free?
I know them system is a plot against my people. Paris can be for us. Nobody can be against us. If that is for my people, I don't know who can fight. Who can fight to be my enemy? My Africa want to be free.
Oh, Africa, 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 won't you be free? Mama Africa, Africa, won't you be free? Oh, Africa, 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 won't you be free? Mama Africa, Africa, won't you be free?
As I know your system is a block against my people. Nobody can be against us. If that is for my people, I don't know who can fight, who can try to be my enemy. My Africa wants to be free.
Africa, Africa, Africa wants to be free. Mama Africa, Africa wants to be free. Africa, 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 won't you be free? Mama Africa, Africa, won't you be free?
Mama Africa is not free.